Hi, I'm Andy Reid.
And I'm Mike Porter. You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations, which is aired on the third Wednesday of each month from 2 until 3 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 ACRA.
On each show, invited guests will be asked to discuss a number of items that they intend taking with them on their Catskill Cabin getaway. As we discuss their chosen items, it is hoped that you, the listener, will enjoy getting to know that person a little bit better.
Today's guest is James Pintotti. James has been working in the modeling and acting industry since 1978 and is the author of what's called The Bible of the Modeling Industry, The Good, The Bad, and The Beautiful, the guidebook for modeling in the U.S. and Canada. He's also a songwriter, musical playwright, with a collection of 9 musicals, 2 shows, and 800 songs. His play Middle School Madness, the musical, was recently performed in Portugal. His show, Life is a Musical, has been performed all over the U.S., and he was the featured performer at Fort Myer, Arlington, Virginia, where he sang I'm a Soldier to 400 guests. James is also the owner of Albany Talent, Actor Model Management, New York, the Capital Region's premier casting agency for commercial and print work. James, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, nice to hear you. I know your voice is a little bit off at the moment, but a
little bit, Andy.
Thanks for joining us and soldiering on, sir.
I'm excited to be here.
So, James, the first song that you'd like to bring to your Cabin of the Catskills is Grandma Bought a Harley, and this is from Rodeo of Love, the song that you've written in a musical that you've written. So tell us about the song and about this musical.
Well, the musical is very simply, Texas State bull riding champion Nat Dandy's been falling off the bull all summer because he fell in love but is too shy to do anything about it. Uh-huh. So before he goes BD, brain dinged, the rodeo cowboys get together and call Dallas radio celebrity, the lone star of love, Parley Humboldt, and pay him to come to Armadillo to teach Nat Dandy how to romance Jenny Bean. Uh-huh.
Now, wait a minute. Is this the rodeo, the musical?
The Rodeo of Love. Yes. And Grandma Bought a Harley was actually the song that Parley wrote that was a hit, and he dedicated it to the woman who kicked his lazy butt out of the house so that he got a job as a janitor at a radio station that launched him into radio stardom. Grandma Bought a Harley.
Are you going to perform this song?
No, I've got a singer by the name of Ernie Cushing, right. And he does a much better job at it than me.
So he's going to say, okay, so we're going to play a recording of the song which you wrote.
Yes.
I'm eating homemade soup out of a can, ironing my shirts by my own hand. For a live at home grandson, I'm sure not having fun. I blame it all on that biker salesman. Well, Grandma bought a Harley from a dude named Charlie. Her pipes are singing and her bells are ringing. She's gone. I can't believe how much the old gal's changed. It's like her cranium's been rearranged. But a woman of 89 ought to stay home all the time instead of popping wheelies out on the range. Well, Grandma bought a Harley from a dude named Charlie. Her pipes are singing and her bells are ringing till the cows come home. Grandma bought a Harley and now she wants to party. She's drinking shots of beer and one moment she's here and the next she's gone. Somehow it don't seem right. I'm reading this here note addressed to me. immediately. Well, Grandma bought a Harley from a dude named Charlie. Her pipes are singing and her bells are ringing till the cows come home. Grandma bought a Harley and now she wants to party. Helmets and leather here, and one moment she's here, and the next she's gone. The next she's gone, and now I'm gone.
That was Grandma Bought a Harley. Now, before I go any further, while I was listening, I've got a story to tell you. There was a guy, God rest his soul, before I go any further, a man died on a motorbike on a country road in Scotland last week, and it was an 86-year-old guy on a motorbike. It was in collision with a car, and that song put me in mind of that story there. Tell me, when did you write this song, and where did you get the idea for it, James?
I was offered a job while I was in college to sell motorcycles, and you know what the story you just told me about is really what kept me away from it. But it was just the funny thing is when you get inside the story for a musical, sometimes songs just happen. They're character driven. They come out of the character. They come out of the situation. Uh-huh. And that's where it came from. A lot of times when I write a song, there's other situations where I have no idea why I wrote the song, but it was there.
Can I ask, when you've obviously done an extensive amount of work in your time, you know, as Mike mentioned at the beginning of the show, umpteen songs, a book, you know, hundreds of songs. Now, would it be fair to say that when you don't really stop working as such, you're always thinking of ideas?
Yeah, I'm sure that, I'm not married, and I probably would be divorced if I did be married.
waking up in the middle of the night. My grandma's got a Harley, that's it.
I've got music going on in my head all the time. And it's, you know, one of the things that I don't do is I don't play an instrument.
Right.
So when I write a song, I hear it all in my head. Mm-hmm. I hear the accompaniment, I hear the instrumentations. And I've been told I tend to move rather oddly whenever I am singing because I'm reacting to the music I hear. But it's, as a result, when I'm working on a song, I'm going over it incessantly. And so I'm sure I would drive anyone else insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's...
But I'm the same. Me and Mike have talked a lot with people on shows and previous shows, and we're talking about people playing instruments. Mike plays... what was it you played?
I played the trombone.
The trombone. And you know, I don't play. I've been a singer a lot of times in my life. And, you know, I'm the same. Whenever I get an idea... You know, it was like scribbling it down and humming it until I actually got somebody who could maybe help me record it with an instrument. Sure. Because if you don't, you can lose it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can't. So, what happens with a song for me is I will have the idea working up, and I'll be going over it about 1,000 times. And then usually when the evening hits, I'll lose it. I'll forget it. And then in the morning when I wake up, if I can sing the song, it's there forever.
Yeah.
It's just there forever. I did one song. I was driving through Montana, and I wrote a song, and I got on the phone, called my mom, because she always was the first to hear my songs. And I'd say, Mom,
poor mama.
I told her, I said, I have no idea why I wrote this song. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. But you want to hear it? And of course, she always did. You know, she yelled at my dad, get on the other line, get on the other line. And so I sang her the song. 4 years later, I'm working on The Rodeo of Love. And actually, its very first title was called Redneck Gigolo. And I'm writing this story, and I come up to this one scene. And I'm writing this scene, and suddenly I realize, oh my Lord, that song fits perfect. And it was called Broken Heart, Colorado. So driving through Montana, I wrote Broken Heart, Colorado. And what's happening is Parley is giving Nat Dandy advice. And Nat is reluctant to take it. And Parley goes, you better listen to me, boy, because I see the direction you're heading. Hmm. It's a dark, lonely, scary place. A ghost town where dreams go to die. Where the outskirts of women meet the pantyhose of hell. And he goes, what's that? He goes, Broken Heart, Colorado. And it launches perfect into this song.
So do you get that a lot, though? You know, you'll write something. It's almost like a jigsaw, a life's jigsaw, isn't it? You know, you'll write something with no preconception of where it's going to fit in.
Yeah.
But as you say, 4 years down the line, it fits in.
Yeah.
You know, and it fits into that part of the jigsaw, you know, the broader scheme of things.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, one thing I'd say to all songwriters or all writers of anything is never doubt your source, never doubt your creativity. Go with it, get it out. If it's there, write it. Because, you know, your life is still one big thing.
Yeah.
And it'll find a way somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's a great attitude to have. Now, I know that you run an acting school, for lack of a better phrase, in Albany. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. I'm actually moved up into this area. 2003, because I had just written my third musical. Mm-hmm. And on vacation up here at Lake George, I went sightseeing and I saw an old church that was for sale.
Right.
That was being run as a theater by a New York City couple. They were getting a divorce and totally eaten up with adrenaline, having no idea what I was doing. I bought the place. And that's what brought me to here. And then after living in the Albany area for 6 years, I just saw a desperate need for a model and talent agency. You know, I've been in the industry for 37 years, and I know it well, and the people here needed something legitimate. So we opened up Albany Talent 6 years ago, and we've done so much more work than I ever would have dreamed possible, and it's been very successful. So it's actually now allowed me to go back and work on the music more,
right?
Because once an agency gets going, it kind of runs itself a little bit. You can caretake it,
right.
But it's a lot of the hard work has been done.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's I'm spending a lot more time with the musicals.
Right. James, one of the items that you'd bring to the Cabin in the Catskills is a picture of your house, this church that was turned into a theater. Now, this was a Methodist church built in 1838.
Yes.
And in 1992, this couple from New York bought it and turned it into a black box style theater.
Yeah, the congregation was moving to a newer theater, newer place. And so, they sold it to this New York City couple. And they started running very odd, obscure New York City style plays. And this is a country setting. So I'm sure the people would come in and just look, what?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Whoa. Obscure plays. He just played a song from the what do you call it? Bronco, the musical.
Yeah. From Rodeo of Love.
Sorry, continue. But.
Well, I've learned to master obscure. But, the couple was putting on shows. And one day the husband came home and found his wife on the stage with one of the actors.
Whoops.
And so they went their separate ways.
Acting out some...
Yes, yes. Scene study.
Yes.
And then she and the actor got married. And then, unfortunately, he passed away. So it was too much for her. She put it up for sale. And that's when I saw it. So that's what brought me to the area. And, you know, music and modeling and acting is all part of my soul.
Well, I love that idea that somebody follows their heart and does all of the things that they believed they were truly put on the planet for. And so I commend you for that, James. Well done. That's excellent.
And this mansion's in Gainsvort. Did I pronounce that correctly?
In Gainsvort.
Gainsvort. And Herman Melville stayed there for a while. The writer of Moby Dick stayed in the Gainsvort mansion.
Yes, the Gainsvort mansion's right around the corner from where the theater is.
Okay.
But it's, they say the name of Gainsvort means goose crossing in Dutch. I think it actually should have been goose droppings. But it's a small little place. It doesn't even have a street light.
Huh.
Does it have a quack?
It's got a couple quacks.
Yeah. Now, the next song that we're going to play is Maybe Someday, also from your musical Rodeo of Love. And what is this song about, James?
Well, Nat Dandy is basically convinced by Parley the only way to win this girl's heart, Jenny Bean's heart, is to go off to Nashville, become a country music star. And so he goes off, and 6 months later, he writes a song. It becomes a hit, and he comes back to Armadillo, Texas, for Jenny Bean's hand. And so Maybe Someday really is, to me, the ultimate dream of coming back to the people that knew you when, but coming back successful.
Yeah.
Coming back as a hero. And I think most people that create, that's there in their mind. And so that's where this song came about. But someone who is on the road, striving for that moment when he can come back home and show them that he was right.
So the song then has a kind of poignancy then?
Yes.
Right. Okay.
Now, this is sung by Nick Rodham from South Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Texas musical, but he wanted to throw in something on the Black Hills from South Dakota. But yeah, this is Nick Rodham singing Maybe Someday. During this, Nat Dandy goes over to Jenny Bean, extends his hand, she takes it, and they dance together.
screaming taxis flying past so fast, like the leaves on a October day. People falling down are swept away, far away. But in the back of my mind, I know you're waiting, saying I'll never care wherever you are, as long as you're with me. Baby, someday I'll come back home as a hero, with my own parade for everyone to see. Baby, someday I'll step back out of the shadow, and maybe someday you'll be proud of me, and maybe someday you'll be proud of me, and maybe someday I'll be proud of.
You're listening to WGXE 90.7 FM, Accra. That song, what was the name of that song, James?
Maybe Someday.
Maybe Someday. Now, can I ask, you obviously wrote the song.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that song is about you?
All of it.
All of it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a... That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. And do you feel that you came back with your head held high, whatever it was?
I'm still fighting.
Still fighting.
We're still fighting. It's a long road. Yeah. I got into the music business late.
Right.
And most of the people that know me through the modeling industry.
Right.
And unfortunately, that doesn't help you much for music or theater.
I really liked that song, I have to say. I thought it was a really nice song.
Yeah.
Well, Rodeo of Love is... I've got another show, Middle School Madness, that's really starting to take off. And I really see Rodeo of Love being the next one right afterwards.
Well, is it being performed anywhere?
Yes.
Where has it been performed?
We performed it at my theater.
Okay.
And I brought in actors from all over the United States. They stayed most of the summer there, and they just loved the show. And people who saw it, you know, they said it should be on Broadway. We did a reading in New York City of Rodeo with a bunch of actors that didn't know me. And it was unanimous. They said this could be a hit.
Yeah, great.
It's a very special show. It's outrageous comedy, but it's also got a tremendous heart to it.
You know, a lot of the time in every facet of entertainment and other things in life, it's about who you know and what you know. And it's not necessarily about what's good and what's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I've heard songs in the past, and I'm sure you have, and, you know, met people with ideas and they don't go anywhere because they don't know the key people that open doors. I really do hope these doors open for you.
Can be, you know, right place, right time.
Yeah.
You know, we had a guest that was hanging out at an establishment in New York City. Somebody comes up, hey, you want a tour in Africa? And
yeah,
wham, bam.
Yeah.
You know, that's...
With the Jacksons, I have to say. Which was... strange, you know, she was telling us a story. Yeah, I just went to New York City, end up working a tour with the Jacksons.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. That just doesn't happen, does it?
You know, it's a luck does play a major role in this.
Yeah.
If you talk to most Hollywood stars, they'll tell you about another actor who was in one of their acting classes that everyone thought was going to be extremely successful and never did it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's... You know, it's very common, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's sad. As you know, sometimes there's, you know, for every multi-talented actor on the television, there's probably 150 behind them could do slightly better.
Well, if there's anyone out there in the radio audience that would like to help out, I'm absolutely. I really do think we're sitting on, of the 9 musicals I have, I think 5 could go to Broadway.
Well, good luck with you.
Thank you.
Now, you were talking about the the Broadway. What was the one at the one I have right next to me, actually?
That's Middle School Madness.
Middle School Madness.
The musical. And we actually have a poster right here.
Yeah, I've got this poster. Cue sound effects.
From one.
I have the poster in my hand, signed, I assume, by the people who were in the...
Well, so far, there have been a total of 40 performances in 13 cities with 8 different casts.
Right.
We've done this with as few as 7 kids. And in Portugal, they did it with over 109. And it was
wow.
Just... So it's an extremely flexible show that can be adjusted to the schools and to the cast members. For example, there's a song called Tall. And when we did the original show, it was sung by a short boy who wished he was tall as a solo.
Well, what I was going to say to you, James, is can you give us a premise of the show?
Yeah. Middle School Madness essentially is a musical documentary of the middle school experience.
Right.
It's not a kid's show, but it's a show about the middle schooler. It's in all of us.
Right.
And it'll take parents right back to what it was like. Grandparents love it. The middle school experience has not changed inside these kids. Yeah, a lot of the details have changed, but it's still they're middle schoolers. And just like we were in junior high.
My mind goes, just now, my mind is going to that program it was on in the 80s. I think it was the 80s or early 90s.
The Wonder Years. Fred Savage.
And that was such a successful show because I think, as you say, it took everybody back there, didn't it? And it didn't matter if it was the 60s, 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
You still went back to that time and you could relate as a kid.
Yes. Well, exactly. I mean, I remember when I was 11 years old, I was 4'7". 12, 4'9", 13, 4'11". Why do I remember these things? Because I wanted to be tall.
Yes.
And so that was how the song started. A short boy wished he was tall. Then in a subsequent cast, we had a very tall girl. And so I rewrote it as a duet between a short boy who wished he was tall and a tall girl who wishes she was short.
Nice.
Excellent.
And it's just, and then the last show we did, we didn't have a tall girl in the cast, but we had 2 short boys who were best buddies, and so we did it as a duet.
Yeah.
And, you know, it works every time because it's true. And it connects with kids. And they really hop on the music like you wouldn't believe.
And is this a comedy, or is it a mixture of comedy
it's
and
all.
Poignancy? Or?
Yes.
Right.
It's a comedy and poignancy. To me, that's part of my writing.
Right.
You can't just have all comedy... Because there's got to be a human element.
Well, you know, Mike put on a fantastic spread when we were eating food before we actually did the show. And, you know, when I was talking with you, you were a lighthearted fella. And now that we're talking, I do see a serious side of you and a poignant side of you. And I can see where there, you know, as we talk, there is a deep-seated seriousness in what you talk about and what you try to... the message you try to convey in your writing. And I find that quite refreshing, actually.
It seems that with my writing, I'm able to say the things that maybe other people can't put into words.
But, you know, the songs I've heard so far and what the listeners have listened to, they're very simplistic lyrics, but effective lyrics also. And I think that's... one of the keys of, you know, it's very easy to write from the heart, but write in difficult prose, but it's very, very difficult to write something very simplistic.
And also very catchy. I listened to Grandma Bought a Harley earlier today, and that song was stuck in my head for hours. And
even the title of the song turns your head. You want to listen.
Yeah.
What's this about?
You know? And, you know, talking about the more serious side of things, I understand that Middle School Madness, the musical, was also used as part of an anti-bullying campaign at a school. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. There's a song in there called Why Do They Hurt, which is, you talk about poignant. There is a theme of bullying that runs all the way through it. And mm-hmm. then finally, the bully has a conversation with a kid classmate who used to live in New York City. And when he was in New York City, he was forced to join a gang. And one night, they beat up a kid bad. He ended up in juvenile detention, and his mother came to get him, and that's the first time he ever saw his single mother cry. She sold everything, moved him to this new community to give him a fresh start, and he's dedicated his life to making it up to her. So he's the one who talks to this boy and shows him the light. And then he sings a song called Mama, I'm Sorry, which was not a dry eye.
I was going to say, I mean, does the boy get through the song without crying?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Mama, I'm sorry. I never meant to hurt you so bad. Right. I did what the others did, not like the kind of kid you raised alone. Right. So, I mean, it shows it's got to have a message that these kids can cling to without coming across preachy.
Yeah, sure.
And that's one of the nicest things I've heard from kids. They said it gets the point about us without beating us over the head with it.
Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic.
But it covers everything. There's relationships, peer pressure, grades, class, teachers, you know, and boys love Middle School Madness because it shows boys being boys.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's a song called Pretty Baby where they're hitting on all the girls in the hallway.
Sure.
And they love that, so.
James, you were saying that in talking to some of the actors and actresses that have been in this play, in this musical, some kids said it was easy because it was just like real for them. It was like being in school.
Yeah. One girl, she told me, she goes, you know, this is almost like it's not even acting because everything I say is something I would have said.
Sure.
So, and yeah, that's.
And that's a backhanded compliment to you, because if a kid is saying that to an adult who wrote the play, the musical, then it illustrates that you're on point, doesn't it? And what you're writing is on mark.
Sure. Not a backhanded comment, but they're dual meaning.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Well, it probably also means I haven't grown up yet.
Well, have you?
No. Actually, the secret to eternal youth is immaturity.
Well, I would know that.
Not me. I was born 50. Now, James, another song that you would like to take is My Angel in Paris.
Well, I was going to try to sing that tonight.
Mm-hmm.
What I've got is I've got the instrumental with you. My Angel in Paris is really just a story about two people running away from their lives, and they find each other while doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes we all go into life with plans, and those plans don't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really plan life. It has ways of surprising you. And so this is a story about two people who found each other in a faraway place. I'd find you so far away from home. Two separate flights to the city of lights. Two people once all alone. My angel in Paris, that's where our love was born. A room by the Seine, away from the rain. July never felt so warm as my angel in Paris. Who needs an Eiffel Tower? The Champs-Élysées will have to delay and wait for a cooler hour. Though I'm from New York, you're from L.A., we both tried escaping ourselves, not knowing in France we'd find our romance with bells. My angel in Paris. praying the clocks don't move, creating an art beyond any in the Louvre. From New York, you're from LA. We both tried escaping ourselves, not knowing in France we'd find our romance with bells. My angel in Paris, under a lucky star. In Europe I found heaven is where.
Superb, sir.
Outstanding, James.
The piano is Mark Finken from Saratoga Springs, an absolutely incredible pianist.
Well, for a man with a sore throat, you certainly gave it, as they say in Glasgow, laldy.
Well, for those in the audience that really know music and know singing technique, you'll notice probably that, yeah, I do not have pure technique. I would probably need to get together with a vocal coach and start working again on that. My breath control isn't what it should be, but I sing well enough to get the point across.
Well, I enjoyed it.
No, it was outstanding.
And entertainment is about enjoyment, and I enjoyed it. So I think that says it all.
And that was the first time I was talking with James about George. We had George Patterson, who also does our theme music. He was on Skype, FaceTiming in from London, and he played some of his original music. But
yeah.
Did he sing?
He did. He sang a little bit of Richie Havens, a song about Richie Havens.
So we did. We have had live performances, but not an original composition.
Actually, I sang on a show, remember? I sang Billy, Don't Be a Hero. But then I started laughing.
Yes, yeah.
Because I knew there was a really high part coming, and I was like, oh, no.
but that, just excellent. Thank you so much, James.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, the next item, which is facing me rather disturbingly across the table, is a dagger, a Spanish dagger. So that's why I've been very nice to you, James, tonight, because in case you pick that up and stab me. Can you tell us more about your dagger and why you've brought it with you?
Well, it was a gift that was given to me by my childhood sweetheart. She went, we actually started dating very young. Well, she was very young. And she was the singer. She was the dancer. She was the model. She was all those things I wasn't. I was a jock. I played football, basketball, and baseball through high school and college. So I got into this industry very late. But she was in it from the age of four. And the only way to describe her was that she was a walking, living light bulb. She glowed with everything she did. And we met, and just from then on, it was no one else. And we dated for 4.5 years. And we got married on Valentine's Day, 1975. And then I lost her in a car accident 8 months later. When she and her mother went to Spain, she brought me back this gift that was a Spanish dueling dagger. It's dated 1873, and it's silver. And it's interesting because it was used by noblemen when they fought. The sides of it are very dull. And the point is extremely sharp. So the only way you can hurt someone is with a direct hit.
Right.
And she brought that back. After she was gone, And I was in a depression for about 5 years. I started modeling, and that helped to get me a little bit back together again. And then modeling turned into acting. And then this music started pouring out of me. I guess one way of describing it is for me to do the work that I needed to do, my heart needed to be bigger. So she cut mine out and gave me hers. So when I decided I had to be an actor and had to do theater, I saw the right play. It was a musical that I used to play at her house all the time, Camelot. She had the album, and I used to memorize it. And I'd sing to her, and she loved it. She'd always say, do another one. And, you know, and I'd sing to my brothers, and they told me to shut up. But when I went to audition for Camelot, I sang a song, and the lady goes, "Well, we've found our Lancelot." And this was my first play ever. And so they gave me a uniform and everything, and I remembered the dagger. And I wanted her to be on stage with me. So I put it in the sheath, and I showed a picture to Michael. Somebody who took a picture of the show, and there's the dagger.
Now, the next song we have,
this is You Said It All, also by James Pintotti.
Yeah, I haven't sung this in a little while, so I'm hoping I don't mess it up. If I do, you'll bear with me.
Well, you made a light work of the song before, so I'm sure it'll be the same.
I think it's going to be just fine.
You Said It All is basically when two people are so close that you barely have to talk. You know that when one person starts a sentence and the other person completes it.
Yeah. Mm.
And so that it was meant to be a portrayal of that kind of relationship. When I didn't know what to say, you said it all. When my logic lost its way, you said it all. Without tricks or games or cute scientific names, you said it all. When I didn't know what to do, you did it all. When my plans all broke in two, you did it all. Why all the way down to Z, you did it all. Without a word, you stopped me. You stopped me. You stopped me. Without a plane, we flew. For I'd fallen for you. When my doubts all started to show, you knew it all. Without tricks or games or cute scientific names, you knew, you did, you said it all. You said, you said, you said it. Oh, you said it all. You said, you said, you said it. Thank you. you stop me without a word. You knew that I'd fallen for you when I didn't know where to go. You knew it all when my doubts all started to show. You knew it all with one look. You knew my mystery was through. You knew, you did, you said it all. You said, you said, you said it. Oh, you said it all. You said, you said, you said it. Oh, you said it all. Oh, you said, you said, you said it. Oh, you said.
You're listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra, that's 90.7 FM. That was You Said It All by James Pentati, performed here in the studio by our guest today, James Pentati. James is battling bronchitis, and he had some concerns about his voice. I wish I sounded as good healthy as he does fighting a serious chest condition. But there you have it.
Oh, Michael, you've got those dulcet radio tones.
Yeah, it has been told by some of our guests that he has a beautiful radio voice.
Yeah, well, thank you. I don't know about that. But thank you so much for sharing that with us, James. This has just been a wonderful experience. It's been great getting to know a little bit more about you and sharing all of your talent and so much of your art. One of the final items we have here, and we've already talked a little about your wife. This is a photograph of you and your wife at Kings Island in Cincinnati, and this is that's a big amusement park there. Can you tell us about that photo?
Yeah, that was that's actually my favorite picture of the two of us together. And I really did very little before I met her. And then suddenly, you know, their family was a family of they're always going out and doing things. And I'd never been to Kings Island, which is a, you know, our great escape, you know, the one we have, you know, Lake George. It's, you know, it's a similar place. And we went there and had that photograph taken, and it seems to me that that picture encapsulates her.
She's beautiful. Yeah. And you guys seem completely happy.
Except for his haircut.
Except for that, well, I got the long 60s, 70s look, you know.
Definitely a jock.
It was 1973.
Yeah, and he's got that thing underneath the bottom lip there. See that?
Nope.
It's
kind
just
shadowing.
Just shadow.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah. No, I
it
didn't.
The pronounced chin.
I don't know if I was growing facial hair by that age.
What age were you there?
I believe I was 19 or 20 years old, I think.
20 years old, yeah. A kid.
I had a baby face.
Now, you know, I found that Woody Harrelson was a wood carver during high school. He worked at Kings Island in Cincinnati, and Carmen Electra was a dancer there in a show called It's Magic. Mm. You didn't ever come across these folks in your travels there.
Nope. I hung out with Lisa, and that was it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, can I ask, just getting back to you, you know, us talking about and introducing you at the beginning of the show, can you tell us a bit about this book you've written?
The book?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Good, the Bad, and the Beautiful, the Guidebook for Modeling in the U.S. and Canada. As I've been in the industry, there are very, very few good books on the industry.
Right.
Supermodels don't write books. And be honest with you, their experience is very limited. They live in what I call a chauffeur-driven society.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When you work in smaller markets, you've got to learn how to drive. And so that's where I worked. And as I started traveling all over the United States as an international model scout, I found to my amazement that people were just dying for information. They were dying for training. They were really needing something to really help them understand the business. And so I wrote this book, And it's, so far, it's been sold in 19 countries. And even though in the title it says guidebook for the U.S. and Canada. But I just recently sold a book in South Africa, in Zimbabwe. So it is a detailed scientific study of the industry of professional modeling and acting.
Can I ask, what do you, for you, you know, since 1978, what's changed in the people's attitudes to acting? And how has the television and media changed the focus of what people perceive acting to be?
Oh, well, I think people sell themselves too short, too quickly. I think, especially some of the projects that they take, they're ready to take the money and run, rather than waiting out for the really strong work.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is one of the reasons I like Tom Hanks so much. Tom has been an incredible judge of material, and his projects are just amazing. I think overall Julia Roberts is another great judge of material. But it's you know, acting, especially for movies, there's a lot of what I call faux acting. And it's when you go to a movie and people are whispering 90% of the time. It's when they go into this, "Oh, Frodo, what danger you're in." it's a cheap way to act, and it's becoming more and more common. You know, you somebody like Johnny Depp whispered his way through 90% of the Pirates of the Caribbean. And so I'm anxious to see what he does with this Whitey Bulger role, which to me looks like his first serious acting in some time. Hmm. So it's obviously it's become such an international business. You find, me personally, you find so many of them not being so pro-American.
Now, can I ask, how much of an impact do you think animated movies has had on the industry and will continue or not to have on the acting industry?
Well, I mean, you know, I think many actors are concerned about the possibility of graphic arts replacing actors.
Right.
And when they become so real, it's going to be cheaper to do that. And so I think in the back of every actor's mind is that time when maybe it might become a lost art form.
Okay. Yeah. James, you know, you have such a great and varied past with acting and modeling. Can you tell us about your first big modeling gig?
My first big modeling gig. Well, it was, you know, one of the things you typically do in the modeling industry is you do remember all your firsts.
Yeah.
I was living in Louisville, Kentucky, and I was going to this one club where they put on fashion shows on Thursday nights. And they were amazing shows. The models worked together so well. And I knew I needed to change. Something in my life had to change. And after seeing about 10 shows, I finally got the name of the agency. I went there and talked to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed up, and that's when I started modeling in 1978. Well, my first job was actually a free fashion show at that club. And I remember being off stage, getting ready to go on stage. I was so, you know, nervous. And I get up there and I put a foot on the stage and I blanked out. Luckily, my feet were trained to move. And I didn't really come to until near the end. And then I realized I had to change into another outfit. So I rushed back to the changing room. Well, in order to get to where the guys changed, you had to go through where the girls changed. And, you know, at the beginning of the show, we're all back there getting dressed. Everybody's in their cubicles, you know. Mm-hmm. So I go through this beaded curtain, and there's a girl with her back to me, bending over in nothing but a pair of pantyhose, adjusting a shoe. I still don't know who that girl was, but I've been in love with her ever since. And that was my first job. It was a freebie, but it was exhilarating to be able to...
But you were paid in memories.
Oh, yes. You didn't say memories, did you?
No. Could have.
Yeah, yeah. But my first print job was for the cover of a business report for Bowl of Wine. My first commercial was a bedding sale for Marshall Field's department store in Chicago. I slept in a bed. I rolled over once, never opened my eyes. And that was my acting debut. So, yeah, it's an interesting thing. You do, it's an exciting business to be in, and you tend to remember your firsts.
Yeah. James, I remember hearing you tell a story about how you had one particular modeling gig where all you had to do was sit down and have dinner with a date. It was maybe you and a lady and another couple. Which gig was that?
That was the Bowl of Wine. It was at a really beautiful restaurant downtown Louisville. We were dressed up nice. It was a candlelight. So as a result, we had to hold our poses for 10 seconds because of the exposure. They brought out 2 filet mignon dinners, 2 trout almondine dinners, a bottle of red, bottle of white. The job took about an hour. My date's name was Chiquita, and she was gorgeous. And I, after the job was over, took an hour. I ate the steak, drank the wine. I made $35 an hour, and that was my first paid print job.
Not bad.
I never saw the picture because it was sent to stockholders. It wasn't meant for public consumption.
Mm.
And that happens many times in our business. You do a job, and you're sometimes lucky if you get a chance to see it.
See the product.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Have you had any people who have went on to become famous come through your agency in Albany?
Well, we're actually the first agency in the country with consecutive models on America's Next Top Model. Laura Lafrat from Scotia came in second. And then in the very next show, Laura James from Cambridge came in first. And they both started with us.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunately, once they go to that show, they have to drop all agency affiliations. So then they got picked up by other places. And so, you know, you wish them the best. Mm-hmm. But I, as a model scout out of New York City, I discovered Fiveville Cover Girls, placed about 100 models internationally.
Now, I know you've been looking at me across the table here, James, and I know you're probably thinking, am I or am I not available? but the truth is, I'm not really interested in modeling. So,
well, no, I do see a market for you because many times in our industry, there are before pictures and then after pictures.
Dear.
I also do the before pictures, it's invigorating, I find.
Yeah, I hear you have a man from Greenville in your camp. Is that true?
Yes, yes. His name is Michael David Porter.
Right. And is he any good? I know he's done a few adverts for you.
Yeah, he's done a great job. He's a consummate professional.
Fantastic. Mm. Well, he looks rather like Mike here.
Poor bastard. It's too bad. Sorry to hear it. But we've come to the end of the show, gentlemen. We got to wrap it up. James, we just have one more question for you. How do you take your coffee?
Cream and sweet and low.
And why sweet and low?
Well, I figure if I ever get eaten by cannibals, I hope they die of cancer.
Excellent reasoning. Thank you.
James, it's been great listening to your stories and your music on the show. Thanks very much for coming in. I really appreciate
it. Thanks a lot, Andy. I really do appreciate it. It was great talking to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm James Pintotti, and you've been listening to Catskill Cabin Conversations on WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM. Special thanks to George, Gordon, and Billy from the band White for the theme music and to everyone at WGXC. Thanks so much.